I suspect that probably most of you have heard me mention, probably frequently, my one great claim to sporting fame. Yeah. For those of you, if there is anybody in the building who hasn't heard this, I was the 1970s Suffolk Junior Schoolboy Long Jump Champion. The summer of 1970 was one of my best summers ever, I have to say. I'd only just taken up athletics, seriously. I discovered that I was a natural sprinter and jumper, and it was just great fun. Training with friends, going to competitions against other schools, spending large amounts of time sitting around in the sun. What could be better? And then the winter of 1970 came. And I have to say, that was not so good. Instead of training at school with friends, it was a case of getting up while it was still dark, going on my own to the local rec, and training on my own. My enthusiasm began to wane. Somehow, being an athlete was no fun anymore. I did manage to pick it up again a little bit next summer, but by the following winter, I had had enough. Being an athlete was just too much like hard work. There was no fun in it at all. Of course, things like that don't just happen in sport. Maybe that job which you'd applied for this job and got this job and it seemed so good at first, and then 6-12 months in, it's stressful and depressing and you just wish you had never ever taken it. Or it could even be a relationship that had started out so well and then just degenerates into something that wears you out. And sometimes the same sort of thing can happen in our Christian lives. And whether it's burnout or tiredness or disappointment with God or frustration or some other reason, we just find that the enthusiasm we once had for the Lord has just gone. And we're going through the motions. I think it was maybe something like that that happened to Jesus' disciples after his resurrection, and especially to Peter. The previous few weeks had been pretty hard for Peter. Having told Jesus that he would stick with him forever, he'd actually run out and denied having anything to do with him. And then he'd seen Jesus tried and seen him crucified. And then he'd seen him alive again. But actually, I suspect he wasn't really sure whether he had or not. You see, Jesus was different. He could suddenly appear in a locked room and then suddenly not be there anymore. Jesus sent word to his disciples to meet him in Galilee. And so the disciples have made their way back up to Galilee. But Jesus didn't seem to be there. I guess that probably all of the disciples must have been feeling drained, uncertain, confused, and certainly in Peter's case, ashamed as well. And so there's that famous incident in John 21, when after all the glory and wonder of the resurrection, Peter says to the others, "Oh, come on, let's just go back to fishing." And you just get the sense that he wanted to go back to something he knew and understood. Following Jesus had been too stressful. And so they went fishing, they caught nothing. And then weary and fed up, they heard a voice from the shore telling them to fish the other side of the boat. And it was Jesus. And after they'd done that and landed an amazing catch, Jesus cooked them breakfast. At the launch of Y Bible at the cathedral on Thursday evening, Bishop Peter said that that is his favourite verse in the Bible. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." And what happened to Peter, I think, does have some important lessons for us as we continue this Sunday evening series looking at Jesus on discipleship. So, the disciples have come to shore. Jesus, the Son of God, who has triumphed over death, has cooked them some breakfast. They've had their breakfast, Let's pick up the story. Sheila is going to come and read for us.
The reading is taken from John 21, verses 15 to 25, and found on page 1090. Jesus reinstates Peter. Verse 15. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." And Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread among the believers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them was written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. This is the word of the Lord.
I wonder how Peter was feeling during breakfast. I rather suspect he was probably feeling a bit on edge, because the inevitable conversation must have been getting closer. What was Jesus going to say to him? Peter's problem, of course, was that only a few weeks earlier, he had made such confident statements about following Jesus, come what may. Jesus had been talking about going away from them. Simon Peter asked him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus replied, "Where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later." Peter asked, "Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Peter was so sure of himself. This conversation had actually taken place in front of the other disciples. In fact, in the account in Matthew's Gospel, Peter says, "Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will." It must have been a terrible blow to his ego when Jesus replied to him, "Will you really lay down your life for me? I tell you the truth, before the cock crows, you'll disown me 3 times. And it must have been an even bigger blow when what Jesus had predicted actually did happen. Peter, who just saw himself as being the hero, ended up being a very public zero. He had utterly let Jesus down. And when you've done that, surely things could never be the same in their relationship. And now, Jesus had met them. He'd cooked them breakfast. And then he turns his attention to Peter, the moment Peter must have been waiting for. But Jesus didn't refer directly to what had happened. I think the fact that Jesus asked Peter a question 3 times was a pretty clear reference to Peter denying Jesus 3 times. And that was why Peter was hurt when Jesus asked him the 3rd time. It brought back the memory of his failure. But did you notice Jesus just did not dwell on the past? Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Of course, unfortunately, we can't see where Jesus was pointing as he asked, do you love me more than these? So we don't know what the these referred to. But maybe that's deliberate. I guess it was the boat, the fishing, the others who were there, just that whole way of life. It's just like Jesus says to him, Peter, what's more important to you? What are you going to choose? This lot? Your old way of life? Or me? Do you love me? And when Peter said yes, that was enough. There was work for Peter to do. Feed my lambs. If Peter really did love Jesus, he'd show it by caring for others. I've kind of realized over the years that there are lots of Christians who are tied down by past failures. And I suspect that all of us here tonight, if we're halfway honest with ourselves, have probably let Jesus down at some time. But what Peter discovered was that we can trust Jesus with our past failures. We don't have to agonize over them. His question today is not, do you remember what you did 6 months ago? Or, give me one good reason why I should trust you again. It's not even, now, are you really, really sorry for what you did? There may be issues from the past which we need to work through for our own well-being, but we should not confuse that with what Jesus demands of us. Once sin is confessed, it is dealt with, full stop. So the first thing that Jesus tells us about discipleship here, when you are a disciple, Jesus actually has your past in his hands and it is perfectly safe there. But when you're a disciple, Jesus also has your future in his hands. Verse 18. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. So Peter just doesn't have to worry about the past anymore, but the fact that Peter is forgiven and restored is not going to guarantee him an easy life in the future. Because for Peter, the future held crucifixion. That same agonizing death that his master had suffered. And I guess if we were to be told that our future held something like that, it might just put us off a little bit. But the important thing was that it was still the Lord's plan for Peter to bring glory to him. Peter's past failure did not disqualify him from that. I am sure that Peter would have preferred it if there was some easier, more comfortable way of glorifying God. But this was the way God had chosen. And Peter was ready to accept that. So that old bravado has gone now. Like, real self-confidence has gone. Just a quiet acceptance that even if he suffered what is quite frankly the most awful of deaths, Jesus was still in control. It just occurred to me during the week. Peter must then have lived for 30 years, maybe, with that hanging over him. And I don't know how the Lord might want to glorify himself through your life. It might be by you doing something dramatic for him. Or it might be through you suffering for him. Or It might be through you sticking in there and keeping going when it is hard and you just feel like giving up. But what I do know is that regardless of anything in the past, God's plan, his purpose, is to glorify himself through you. So, right at the heart of discipleship, it involves trusting God with your past and actually trusting him with your future. It involves knowing that he won't let you down. He will use you to bring glory to him. And then, having told him what it would involve, Jesus just said, "Follow me." Actually, it's kind of, "Keep on following me." Jesus says to Peter, "Follow me." And Peter straight away turned and saw the disciple Jesus loved, probably John himself, and he asked Jesus, "What about him?" Isn't it strange how easily we kind of stop looking at what God is calling us to do and start thinking about what God may well be calling somebody else to do? You know, you hear the challenge to be involved, say, in children's work, and our immediate response is to think of someone else who you might be calling to do that. And it's not just children's work, it can just be virtually any area of ministry. "Here I am, Lord, please send someone else." Or, the other classic, of course, we hear a sermon which really challenges us. What's our immediate response? Generally, it's to hope that so-and-so is listening to this because they could really do with hearing this. But did you see what Jesus' reply to Peter was when Peter sort of, "Well, what about John?" Jesus' reply, this is a very paraphrased translation, is basically, "Peter, mind your own business. Your business is to do what I've called you to do. What I've called John to do is just between me and him." Different disciples called to different things. But the fundamental was, do you, Peter, love me? So discipleship. What is it that we've let ourselves in for? What is it that we have to present to others? Well, there's good news. Jesus is big enough to handle your past. If you've confessed your past failures, they are no longer yours to worry about. And I have known people who have resisted becoming Christians because of stuff in their lives. They thought they weren't good enough. Can't be like that. Once something's confessed, what we were seeing earlier, as far as the east is from the west, so far has he cast our transgressions from us. And the future, Jesus has got that in his hands. Jesus wants you to glorify him. And that in itself is a pretty remarkable thing, isn't it? And we're talking about the creator and the sustainer of the universe, the one who upholds everything by his powerful word, and yet he's chosen you to glorify him. And he's got a way for you to do that. And that's his purpose for your future. And it's about you and Jesus. What other people should be doing for Jesus is between them and him. It's about you and him. And that means the question is always the same as it was for Peter. Do you love Jesus? Are you going to follow him and serve him? Because that's what discipleship is about. And then the focus swings back to Jesus himself. And the last verse of John's Gospel just seems amazing. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. It sounds like a pretty big overstatement, but I don't think it is. I think it's just bracketing John's gospel. If you go back to the beginning of John's gospel, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole world would not have room for the books that would be written. Because the whole of the history of the universe is actually the story of Jesus. The one who created the world, the one without whom nothing would exist, the one who still has this vast universe in his hands, is the one who, when his disciples were feeling down, met them on the beach and cooked them breakfast, lifted them up, encouraged them, restored them, and then said, just what he says to us. Do you love me? Then follow me.